Oh, yeah. It's Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And I want to know if you've been knocked down, if life's been giving you a hard time, if you feel like maybe you're not being treated fairly, I have news for you. It's the beginning of your success. If you've ever heard the story of Wilma Rudolph, this girl's born prematurely, contracted infantile paralysis, and comes back in 1960s to win the 100-meter dash, the 200-meter dash, and the 4x100-meter relay, becomes the fastest woman in the world. But at the age of 9, she couldn't walk unassisted. But it was this curse that created her dream to be a runner. It was her darkest moment that gave her her sunlight. So perhaps, just maybe, if you're going through something that's really tough, you don't think you can get out of, that you don't see the end of, maybe that curse is your blessing. Maybe that's just exactly what God's giving you, so you can get that hunger to find your dream, to make it happen. If I can quote Manu Jaswani, the CEO of Shoemart, when he said, you know, life, the flavors of life are not found in the tasting, but they're found in the hunger. And you get your hunger in that dark moment. It's about going through that tough time and believing that pain is only temporary. It doesn't last forever unless you quit. And tonight, we're going to find out what it takes to make it in business. And I can tell you one thing's for sure, you got to have that never give up attitude. So tonight we're going to look at what it takes to be successful with some of the biggest success stories. Because of the tennis, however, we only have one guest this evening. And his name's Saeed Al-Shaksi. He's the chief executive officer of the Shaksi Group. Let's have a little bit more about his background and exactly what he does. Before we do that, I want to thank our sponsors, the ICAEW, the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales, who allow us to bring you these great stories of success and give you a little insight that hopefully inspire you and give you a blueprint of how you can run your own career, especially if you feel like you've lost your way or you're not hitting stride. And equally so, if you are successful and you want to be even more successful. Saeed, welcome back. Welcome to Eye on Careers.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
But you could be the chairman of DMCC, you know,
well,
potentially.
Yeah, that sounds great.
not too bad. They have done an amazing job. But you're the CEO of the Shaksi Group. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, the Shaksi Group was established by my grandfather back in 1976. It's a privately owned, holding company that invests primarily in the oil and gas and construction sectors. And we started off by representing big foreign companies, and we recently shifted into doing things on our own.
Right, right now you're running the construction arm of the business, is it?
Well, right now I'm running the entire group, but after joining, I basically founded our construction businesses.
Right. Okay. So, but after you finished high school, did you have a dream or a vision of what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be?
Yeah, it's quite different from what I'm doing right now. My dream was basically to, you know, I was a programmer from a very early age, and I had a passion with technology and the internet, and I saw my career sort of gearing myself up towards tech companies and, you know, doing something in the tech space, something very innovative and, you know, sort of changing the way things were done, which is why I did my undergraduate in software and computer engineering.
Right. And so you did that in Canada.
That's right.
In McGill University in Montreal, as the French say.
Oui, oui.
Oui, c'est très bien. Lots of studying happening in Montreal, I'm sure.
Very much so. I was immersed in my books all the time.
For those of you who aren't familiar with Canada, Montreal is an area where people have very strong interpersonal skills, and it's a very social city, alive with art and culture, we may say.
Yes, indeed.
So you got your degree. I was talking with your dad earlier, and he wasn't so sure that Montreal was the best choice.
Is that right?
Yeah. He was a little concerned. He didn't know how much studying was happening. But you got into the master's program at McGill, so you wouldn't have been able to do that if you weren't hitting the books.
That's right. That's right.
But you were training for the MMA at the same time, I believe.
Well, yeah, I was, because I always had a passion for martial arts, and I sort of got into mixed martial arts when I moved into Canada. I always did the more conventional stuff like taekwondo and what have you, but it seemed more interesting to mix it up with a bit more of grappling and ground fighting too.
But you didn't pursue that. Did you want to be a professional fighter?
No, not at all. It was always a hobby for me. It was something I always did on the side, you know. I never wanted a career in that.
So how do you go from, you know, snowy Canada to come back to Oman?
Well, what happened was I was working for a tech company called Teradyne at the time. I enjoyed what I was doing. It was very nice. It was in the technology space. It was what I always dreamed of. However, I saw that I could do a lot more, and I was just a pawn in the big picture, and I wasn't able to contribute everything I had to the organization. So I started doing some research on what I could do back at home, and I looked into, you know, solar startup companies, and I was thinking of coming back and building a solar farm and selling off electricity to the government. And the government was doing something along those lines. They were starting some pilot projects. But unfortunately, when I got back, the government sort of put it on hold and decided to focus more on the conventional stuff. And that's when I, you know, really started taking up our family business and driving its growth.
Do you feel that, you know, a lot of people, they like to talk about blue ocean strategy and taking first mover advantage? And is that almost a falsehood? Because, you know, if you really want to make money, you know, sell pizza, hamburgers, construction, you know, the bread and butter businesses. Often when you go into these kind of blue ocean strategies, the buying cycle is not there. The customer's not used to the product or service. There's so many, you know, the regulatory environment may not be correct. There's so many hurdles that, you know, you may be wiped out. You may have been better just bringing a pizza to Oman.
I sort of agree with that, but I think it's good to have a combination of both. So you need to have your blue ocean strategy within your red ocean. Your red ocean would be your bread and butter, and that's what pays the bills and what have you. But you should always be looking for your niche. And I think even in bread and butter businesses like construction, people can find a niche and find spaces where you know they can bring something new to the market.
So it's, you know, from an entrepreneur who wants to hit cash flow very quickly, you'll probably want to go with the traditional business model first and then pepper your portfolio with a blue ocean opportunity.
That's exactly what we did with our construction business. It's a very competitive sector, but what I realized very quickly is that there were very large-scale companies in Oman and very small companies in Oman, and there was a huge gap in between. So people with mid-sized projects didn't really have a quality contractor to go to. They would have to deal either with the larger players, which wouldn't want the job, or with the smaller guys that couldn't handle such a job, and that's basically where I started.
So you went in as a mid-sized company. This was your kind of an analysis, and this is where you should go with it.
That's right.
So what's the market in Oman? You know, what's going to happen to Oman? Like right now, we're in kind of a depressed oil price state. There's probably some concern about it. When I talk to my friends in the oil and gas business, they assure me that the oil and gas price is coming back up. When I talk to my friends in the private banking business, they assure me the price is going down even further. So where do we stand? Should we be buying oil? Should we be shorting it? But more importantly, what about an economy like Oman? How are they going to fare through this? What's your prediction? What's going to happen here?
Well, I'm pretty sure oil prices are going to go up. I think if the key people or the key thing that brought the oil prices down was the U.S. shale boom, and their market share is slowly declining, and you can see right now that the oil prices are starting to edge upwards. But I think in the grand scale of things, our economy is 90% reliant on oil and gas revenues, and I think
90%.
Yeah, 90%.
Doesn't feel like that, because it feels like it's a diversified economy when you go to Oman.
I think we've been targeting to diversify our economy, but we're not there yet. We've taken some good steps towards it, but I think they will tell you 80%, but I would say 90% when you consider a lot of the indirect revenues coming in. That are basically related to oil and gas. Now, we've got a lot of potential in Oman for tourism and logistics, because we're at a very strategic location regionally. And I think we've started moving in the right direction, and I think the depression in oil prices has forced our government to be more efficient and to sort of speed up their diversification plans. So I think it's a good thing. Sometimes shocks like this teach you how to be more efficient, teach you how to be stronger.
Right. So, I think the country's had huge growth, right? If you look at the GDP growth over the last decade, it's almost 8 times. I think you were doing about $20 billion in the late 90s, and now it's up around $80 billion dollars. So it's a huge growth that we're looking at. And so, obviously, hearing you, you're kind of very bullish on what the future holds for Oman.
Definitely.
But
I think there's going to be a major paradigm shift in how things are going to happen and what will drive the economy moving forward. I don't think it's basically been driven by government spending, and I think now it's changing, and I think now it's going to be driven by foreign direct investment and a lot of private investment. So I think we're not going to be waiting for government contracts as we used to. I think we're going to be waiting for developers to come in and foreign direct investment.
But is that going to happen with these strong localization campaigns? I think Oman has one of the most aggressive localization campaigns that we've seen in the GCC. Is that policy going to lax a little bit? Is it going to become more aggressive? And how does that affect you as a business owner?
Well, I think I think it should go beyond the way it's currently done is they're focusing on Omanization. Now, what Omanization is basically the focus on employing locals, and I think they need to take that one step further, and I think they need to start supporting local companies as they do support local people looking for jobs. I think Omanization is a good thing because the government invests a lot of money in training people. And what we have or what we had was basically structural unemployment, whereby the skill sets that the unemployed had did not match, the sort of skill sets that the companies and businesses were looking for. And I think they're bridging that gap now, and it's a good thing in the long run because, I think the best or the biggest investment that the government could ever make is in its people. And they're gonna drive the growth basically in the future.
So you think not only is the localization policies a positive, but that they should be more aggressive to include stronger favorable regulations for Omani run and owned businesses.
That's right, and I think they've already started doing that. I just think they need to strike a balance, and sometimes they may need to just pull back a little bit before moving forward. It's fine for them to do what they're doing, and I'm pro Omanization, but I think they shouldn't take it to the point where it's a red tape for businesses and foreign investment. They shouldn't scare anyone away.
Very interesting. I think it's now again a moment for our theme song here. if it... This is Eye on Careers. We're listening to Saeed Al-Shaksi, Chief Executive Officer of the Shaksi Group, and he's giving us our insights into running a business and his economic outlook into what's happening in Oman and the region. And we just heard a little bit about his ideas on localization, and we're going to be right back with what was the biggest challenge he's ever faced and how he got through it, including a huge loss for his business and how he survived a battering blow. So it's one story you definitely don't want to miss. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Oh yeah, welcome back. It's Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we're listening to the story of Saeed Al-Shaksi, the Chief Executive Officer of the Shaksi Group. Hello, Saeed. Welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Hi.
It's the Shaksi Group, or?
Yeah, that's right. The Shaksi Group.
Okay, great. I thought I got it wrong for a second, but... It's quite a large group, and for those of you just joining us, the best part of the show is it's interactive. So if you have a question for Saeed or myself, you can SMS us at 4001, or you can go to the website at DubaiEye1038.com and download our mobile app and interact with us as you wish. Ask us any questions at all. Again, that's 4001. So, Saeed, we wanted to know, you know, what has been, you know, the biggest challenge you faced in running your business? Was there ever a day where you just wanted to hang yourself?
Yeah, after 2 years of setting up our construction company, we ran into some major losses. And it was mainly due to me choosing the wrong type of people in the organization. And it basically wiped out our capital and more. And it was really a tough time. It was one of the biggest challenges I faced. I hadn't really faced any challenges prior to that. And you know, I at one point I almost felt like giving up. But you know, I just sort of pulled myself together and you know, looked at the problem very objectively. And started tackling it one by one, breaking it down into smaller pieces and finding solutions.
But you felt betrayed.
I definitely did, yes.
I mean, I think when you're a trusting person, you don't think like how a criminal may think or how someone who's not ethical or someone who doesn't have integrity thinks, and so you can get blindsided by these things.
Exactly. I was more focused on the business and on the technicalities and the developments. Without, you know, sort of keeping an eye on the corporate governance internal controls, if you may, and you know, some people in the team took advantage of that, unfortunately.
Had their hand in the cookie jar.
Oh, yes, they did.
And did you want to kill them?
Yeah, you know, I did contemplate it, but, you know, sometimes you just got to be a gentleman and move on.
This is when you're... this is when your MMA training comes in, you know, and you just let the animal loose on them.
Exactly.
But you didn't?
No. I couldn't. I had to be a businessman, and I had to put the company before everything else. And so I had to do what was better for the organization, and I had to sack about 50 people.
Whoa.
It was, yeah.
50 people? That's a lot of people in the cookie jar.
Oh, yeah. It was organized. It was really, it was pretty bad. And you know, what happens is it spreads like a plague, right? Now, if the junior sees his boss doing it, then he says, well, why shouldn't I? And what tends to happen is you know, they start recruiting people that think like them. And instead of you having a productive culture in your organization, you end up with a culture of criminals or people that are bad for the organization. So I had to take a quick decision and clean it up very fast.
So it's so funny how that culture, you know, as a leader, you're a culture creator. Get the wrong leaders in the business and you've got a very toxic culture created.
There you go. Look, I still had some really good people, really loyal people. And, you know, basically what happened was I had to restructure the organization and bring in a new team. However, before I did that, I set up a very strong internal audit division. And I started, you know, looking at how bigger organizations ran, and I started to, you know, introduce the same sort of systems that they ran, and it worked out. It worked out well.
An expensive lesson.
Definitely. But I think it was a very good lesson. I don't think we would have achieved the growth that we did had I not learned from that.
It's an MBA from the School of Hard Knocks.
Exactly.
And so you're past that now, and now you have a very strong audit function. But I find a lot of companies, you know, in the Middle East, they have a financial audit, but they don't have operational audit, or they don't actually take a more holistic approach to the audit function.
Well, no, ours is quite complete. You know, it goes beyond just the financial aspects. It does definitely look into operational aspects. We look at risks, and wherever we can, we sort of have a risk matrix, and we try and stay away from things that are, you know, either operationally or financially risky.
Is this, you think, the right way is to have audit handle risk, and in essence, your chief audit officer then becomes your chief risk officer? Or does it make sense to have a separate risk function?
Well, the auditor just audits. He is not really a part of the process. He's more of an observer and an implementer, so he tries to enforce. And then, you know, each division sort of has its risk function. We don't have a separate risk division, if you may. However, we have procedures to assess risk. Mm. And the auditor just ensures that the process is followed.
Mm. And then, like in a family business, do you have reporting into the board, or your board's the grandfather, or how does that work?
Well, my board is the grandfather, my father, and my aunt. And, you know, my father played a very significant role in helping me shape up the business and turning it into a more of a corporate environment as opposed to a family run business, and he was my biggest mentor and advisor throughout the entire process.
Right. I think your father was the former CEO of Dubai Islamic Bank.
He was the former CEO of Dubai Banking Group, they own Dubai Bank, not Dubai Islamic Bank.
Dubai Bank, sorry. Yeah. And now he's the CEO of Bank Al Iz.
That's right.
Oman, right? Yeah. So you got a good mentor there who knows how to run a business.
Definitely.
And that always helps, yeah. I think. But so do you think in the future that more companies will start developing a risk function separately, or do you think they'll take more time in the Middle East?
Well, I mean, it all depends on their objectives and on their strategy. But I think in order for them to grow and to get to the next level, they're going to have to start introducing these sort of things. You can be lucky, and you could run it based on trust and based on intuition. But then, you know, what happens when the big boss leaves, and how do you ensure that, you know, the intuition is always correct, and how do you ensure that people are always following through if it's not done through a process that's audited?
Right. So as you mature in your business acumen, you've got a real good grip on operations, making sure you have those double checks in place. As you move forward, what other areas do you need to really focus on? Is the job of the CEO really making sure you're bringing in the top line numbers, right?
Well, yeah, I mean it is definitely that, but I think it's more than that. And right now, now that I've got that out the way, now that I've turned the company around, I'm looking at growth. I'm looking at expanding, our operations regionally. We're setting up an office here in Dubai. I'm looking at acquisitions, things that are very closely related to the construction sector. And in fact, it's more along the lines of vertical integration. So I'm staying focused.
Right. No, but this is all kind of different from what your schooling is, because you did engineering, you did electrical engineering and software programming. And now really the skill set is closer to that or more akin to that of an MBA. Do you feel that you may want to go back to school, or do you feel that on the job training is better?
Well, I think formal training would be good. It's just that I don't think I have the time for that right now, and I think it would be a lot better for the company if I acquired people with MBAs to add that kind of value, as opposed to me leaving the business and trying to better myself individually. I think I could do a lot more in this time, or in the time that it would take me to get an MBA to grow our business.
Right. So when you move into the Middle East, as you move into new markets, how important is something, like WASTA, for example, or have we kind of moved past that and, it's really about merit and where, how you can deliver a job and positioning your brand in the right segment? Or do you need both?
I think anywhere in the world, not just in the Middle East, and here it's called WASTA, and in the States it's called lobbying, and it's always a case of you rub my back and I rub yours. But I think you need a good combination of both. I think you need to have a sellable product. I think you need to have a sellable service, and a very professional one at that. And then you need to know how to acquire business. And because you WASTA may work one time, but if you don't deliver, then good luck to you next time. So you need a very good combination of both.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just look at Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was an actor, became the governator, as they called him. He became the governor of California, which has a GDP 6 times that of Saudi Arabia, just to put it in perspective, you know, how big of an economy that is, that's really being led by the former Terminator.
That's right. And
I think when he asked, when his finance manager messed up, he said, "What are you going to do, Arnold?" He said, "If he does it again, I'm going to make him do push-ups." That was the worst Arnold impression I've ever heard. Anyway, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's not just in the Middle East, but, you do have to have a power, what, academics call creating a power network, irrespective of where you are, having access to decision makers.
I totally agree with that. And I think it also has to be coupled with a very good business. Otherwise, you'd let those decision makers down, and they wouldn't help you again.
Right. So what's interesting for you? A lot of people now are expanding into Africa. I guess from Oman you expand into UAE, or is this market saturated? Do you go to Saudi Arabia, or do you go to a completely different market like China? I don't know, Malaysia, Indonesia.
Well, currently I'm looking at expanding regionally, more because it makes sense operationally. We are looking at some opportunities in Africa, but not in the construction space, more in the property development space. I do think Africa has a lot of potential. It's kind of like it's one of those untouched places, and it's got. It's got natural resources. It's got human capital. But it's not exploited yet. They've even got huge oil and gas reserves that have not been tapped. And I think in the long term, they may do well. But the problem with places like Africa is, the rules are not as straightforward as anywhere else in the world. It's high risk, high return, but I think we'd need to couple that with a more mature market too. So we're also looking at investments in Europe. Maybe a combination of the safe and risky stuff will give us a better yield in the long term.
Which is Europe the risky stuff or the safe stuff? I'm not sure, but we'll find out in a minute. This is Saeed Al-Shaksi, Chief Executive Officer of the Shaksi Group, giving his lessons learned on the road to the top, a man on an international expansion effort. So we'll be right back.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Oh, yeah. Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we're here with Saeed Al-Shaksi, the CEO of Al-Shaksi Group. Welcome back to Eye on Career, Saeed.
Thanks.
And for those of you who are wondering what our theme song this evening is, you can SMS us at 4001. If anybody gets it right, you can guess this song, you win a prize. SMS us at 4001 or use your mobile app from DubaiEye1038.com. You can download the mobile app right there. But let's see if anyone knows what this song is. So, Saeed, you know, when you're the chief executive officer of your, and you have, you know, your staff, you know, big part of your job is building the team, getting the team to drive towards a team goal. If you can follow me for a minute, you know, when you rent a car, for example, you don't take it for a car wash, you don't take it for an oil change. You might take it for a car wash if it gets too dirty, but, you know, you definitely won't take it for an oil change because you don't own that car, you're just renting it. A lot of employees are like that. They're renting their seat, they're renting the strategy, they're renting the vision. It's not their vision. You know, it's not necessarily where they want to go. How do you make that switch? I think the great leaders really get their staff or their people, their team to buy into, you know, that dream, that, and they take ownership of it like it's theirs.
Well, I think the key word there is inspiration. You really need to inspire them. You need to sell them your vision. They need to feel that they're a part of it. And you also need to show them their career path within that vision. So they, you know, it's a win-win for all. They see their goals being achieved as, and they see that it's tied to the organization's goals being achieved. And really the key there is through inspiration, getting them motivated and making them feel like they're one, like they're a family.
Do you think, you know, one of the jobs of a leader is motivating people?
Well, yeah, definitely. I think it's the key part of being a leader.
It's the key. You have to motivate people, because the other thing is, like what Jack Welch said is, you know, good people don't need to be motivated, and you should fire the bottom 25%. You know, and that's really kind of a hard-nosed line on it, that, you know, if you're not motivated, here's your pink slip, go find a new job, you have 2 weeks, and, you know, that's the American model. Whereas here in the Middle East, it's exactly like you said, let's nurture him, let's train him, let's develop them, let's kind of find out, you know, if he's not really hitting it in this spot, let's move him to another spot, see if he gets it there. Where do you sit on this continuum?
Well, I think Jack Welch may be right, but I think what he's doing in essence is motivating them with negative reinforcement. Yeah, so he's using the stick. And I think a good combination of a carrot and stick strategy works. I think you should try to motivate them positively first, and if that doesn't work out, then you definitely need to take action. A business is not a charity.
Is the carrot and stick really the best option? I mean, now we have evidence from the market. Like, for example, we have Encyclopedia Britannica knocked out of business by Wikipedia, which was built and developed by professionals with no carrot, with no stick. These were professionals just working for free. We had Linux that just, you know, is the number one operating software for servers, hands down, completely made for free by professionals, you know, working for free. You have Apache, which is one of the leading web-based softwares, again, developed by professionals for free. And on as we kind of march into the 21st century. Do you think the carrot and the stick are going to survive? Or, you know, do you think that the carrot and stick, as you said, is the correct way, and these are just anomalies that are popping up, that that really just outlier moments? Or are these really pointing at a system that is archaic, a vestige of our past, which is soon to be gone, like our appendix or something? It's just there, but we don't really use it.
Well, to be honest, I think I think that the open source community, the people that developed the likes of Wikipedia and the likes of the Apache server, are extremely motivated. I actually fixed some of the bugs on the Apache server because It wasn't working for one of my assignments in university. And I think the open source community is may not they're extremely motivated and inspired to outdo the you know, the likes of Microsoft and the more proprietary software systems. They're inspired, and I think they're very highly motivated, but not in the sense of a CEO sitting on top of them making them false promises. I think it's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I wouldn't say that the open source community isn't led by a carrot and stick. There's not much of a stick there. I think there's more of a carrot.
Right. So you're saying it's basically the same system at work. We just can't see it like that.
At work, you've got the leader that's sort of giving the vision and trying to inspire people to move and to align themselves with that. And I think with the open source community, it's analogous in the sense that they all have a common goal and a common vision to beat the proprietary systems. And develop something that can really add value, and they jointly work together to achieve that goal.
What about aligning your people? You know, now when you're talking about aligning people from a strategic perspective, from a visionary perspective, but at the end of the day, as a business owner, you are inherently taking more risk. You know, if I work for you, you know, and things start going wrong, I get my paycheck, I walk out the door. You know, things that are going wrong for you, you know, you can't walk away. Your name's on the line. You're liable, especially in the Middle East. You know, the liabilities are probably much more than in other regions. How do you get an alignment with your team? You know, other regions, I think they do stock options and equity shares. But, you know, the markets aren't really mature enough here for that all the time. You know, some companies can do it, but, you know, they don't have different types of shares, et cetera, et cetera. What's the approach there?
Well, I think there are a lot of private companies across the world that are extremely successful that don't offer stock options and shares. I think you need to have incentive programs, that You can benchmark yourself to whatever is happening regionally and try and outdo that. But I think the mode of operation here is bonuses, and I try to always give, you know, the high performers good bonuses to motivate them and keep them loyal to the company.
I think we have a winner to our competition here. Hello.
Good evening.
Is this Phil?
It is, yes.
Phil, you have an idea of what this song is.
I do, yes. You want me to tell you?
Do you like the song, for sure?
Well, I just recognized it from its TV program, frankly.
That's PC for no, you don't like the song.
That's like, well,
do you like this song? Like, I've heard it before.
I don't dislike it, thank you.
That's very. Are you in politics? I don't not like the song.
Yeah, I'm not in politics, no.
You have a very strong political acumen. Let's see if we can guess what Phil does. Saeed, do you have any guesses of what Phil does for a living?
He sounds like a lawyer.
A lawyer?
Yeah. He's politically correct.
He could be government relations. He could be the government relations. Guy.
MI5 maybe, 007.
Phil, what do you do for a living?
I'm the group operations director for a landscape architectural practice.
Oh, okay. We were just talking about operations and the importance of getting a strong operational audit function in the business.
Yes.
Do you think that's critical?
Absolutely, yes.
Excellent. So, sorry?
Yes, of course. I mean, it's the, let's say, the part of the full engine room of the organization. So
this is an area that's sweeping the region. Like right now, you can see a big movement in, you know, a big equity increase for people who are in risk, who are in an audit, who are work, you know, with corporate governance. theme is really being sung in chorus across the region right now. And, you know, you find a lot of companies, they have the financial audit in place or the external, you know, financial, you know, that the numbers are being authenticated. But you're not really following up on an operational level where audit can then partner with the business and create value.
Mm. But thank goodness it's coming now.
So this is this is a trend you're seeing from your side. Yeah. It's an exciting moment in the Middle East. But congratulations, you're definitely our winner for this evening, and
you
get a free 1 hour executive coaching session to help align your career, take your career to the next level.
Well, I'm delighted. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good show.
Thank you so much. Well, we'll be back in touch shortly, and thanks again, Phil.
Pleasure. Nice to talk to you. Have a nice evening.
Thank you. Bye now. So that was Phil. He's in operations, and he just verified everything that Mr. Shaxi here has just said to us. So there you go. And he doesn't like Magnum P.I. we're going to come back and we're going to find out what Saeed Al-Shaxi, the CEO of Al-Shaxi Group, looks for when he hires. What do we need to look for when we hire top people who aren't going to have their hand in the cookie jar? So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dubai i103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Oh, yeah. It's Eye on Careers. We're back. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are with the Chief Executive Officer of Al-Shaxi Group, Saeed Al-Shaxi. He is one of the leaders in the construction and as well as in the oil and gas business in Oman. Beautiful, sunny Oman that's blessed with mountains and greenery and ocean and history. I love Oman. Saeed, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thanks for having me, Shane.
And it's been pretty interesting. For those of you just joining us, we had a big winner on the show, Phil from Operations, who identified this song, Magnum P.I. The song is a bit better than his shorts were, but... But for those just joining us, Saeed has been talking about, you know, how he fell into the family business and most challenging moment when he had a band of 50 cronies who had their hands in the cookie jar almost pulled the rug out from the business. And he had to turn it around and a real focus on corporate governance, the importance of good audit functions. And then we looked at some of his business ideologies, strategies, and how he creates an alignment and engagement with his team. But now we want to know, especially for all those out there who are currently looking for a job, or perhaps you have a job and you're looking for a better one, which is often the case in this town. What do you look for when you're hiring? What do you look for when you're trying to identify that top performer?
What I look for is, you know, obviously you get a lot of good CVs, and mostly the shortlisted CVs all have the set of experience that you're looking for. They're all well educated from good universities. So I tend to focus more on the soft skills. I like to sit down and have long discussions with people, especially when they're coming in for key positions. I need to make sure that they'll align with our culture. I need to make sure that they have the same sort of mindsets and the same sort of visions that we have and that we're striving to achieve.
How do you, as you're a smaller company, and especially as you mentioned, you know, as you walk through that big crisis, you're actually pulling out after getting big losses, you have to operate on a shoestring. Especially as a new business, sometimes, you know, your first couple years, you can't necessarily get the talent that you need. And the thing is if there's ever a time when you need talent is when you're starting up, because that's when you're going up against the big boys. You're trying to take market share from people who have been in business for 15, 20 years. How do you attract talent when you're running on shrapnel?
Well, I think I look at it as an investment. It's a chicken and egg situation where, you know, you think you're too small to attract them, but in order for you to grow, you need them. So I usually just, you know, I usually just pay the extra penny and try to attract the best talent that I can. And in the long term, it always tends to pay off.
You get what you pay for.
You definitely do.
I got that the other day. I was in an airport, and you know, you had the branded, whatever, Starbucks or whatever, and then you had the no name guy coffee shop, and I was like, oh man, it's like it'd be cheaper. I'll go try this stuff, and it was just horrible. So, service was horrible. It tasted horrible. The it was just like, you know, whenever you stray from that model, you really get hit. What do you think are the key traits of an entrepreneur? There's a lot of people out there think of starting their own business. You know, they want to know, do they have what it takes to go the mile? What are the traits of a successful entrepreneur?
Well, I think you need to have a clear strategy. You need to know what you want first, because, you know, you shouldn't just operate blindly. I've come across a lot of people that, you know, have very interesting ideas, but they're not focused. So, you know, you need to be hyper focused, and you need to be strong. You know, you need to have faith and be able to get up off your feet. You should be able to take a few blows because they'll definitely come.
So knowing what you want, having the focus, and then being able to take a beating.
Exactly.
That's amazing, actually. It's funny when you say it's a simple thing, but a lot of people don't know what they want. And you have, you know, under motivational theory, you have things like the Pygmalion effect and the Galatea effect, where they've actually shown where if you take underperforming employees and give them to a manager, but the manager really has a high sense of self and thinks that they're a great manager, and then they think in their mind that I only select good employees and that, you know, I give the people the best training. Just because the expectations of the manager is so high, the employee's performance switches. And it's almost like we're projecting our lives in front of us as much as we're watching it.
I totally agree with that. I think you can be whatever you want to be, but you just need to know what it is you want to be, right? And I think for anyone that's toying with, you know, quitting their job and becoming an entrepreneur, I would advise you to do so, but I would advise you to tread with caution. Make sure that you know what you're doing. And if you really believe in it, then just go for it and don't give up. Persevere.
I was talking to Arthur Berman, who lost 180 pounds in 10 months. This guy it's an amazing story. It's on the internet. But he said, here's a formula. Achieve anything you want in life. He said, start, don't quit. And it is exactly what you're saying, because most people, they don't know what they want, so they don't start. Or if they do, once they do start, it gets a little hot, like your situation where you basically almost went bankrupt, but you pushed through where other people would have given up.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But then I also think that you should know when to quit, because sometimes you're just banging on a brick wall. And it's not about knowing when to quit, but I think it's knowing when to change your strategy. So I don't think you should give up in any case, but sometimes you need to rethink what you're doing and maybe change it around a little bit and find your niche, find your blue ocean and keep persevering.
What is your final piece of advice for anyone out there who wants to take their career to the next level?
If you're looking at not becoming an entrepreneur and taking your career to a next level, I would advise you to stick to your career, because there are a lot of job hoppers. You know, don't change your job if you're just looking for a new job. Change your job if it's going to enhance your career. And it all boils down again to you knowing what you want and being focused on that. So you should know what sort of a career path you want, and I think you should stick to it and don't make a move to a new company or a new organization unless it's going to better your career overall, even if it means you taking a bit of a pay cut.
Stick to activity, you know, that again, and that comes down to your point on focus. Really, really critical. And, you know, I think it's funny that success is actually it's pretty simple. It's not this elusive thing that we imagine that only genius or some kind of special superhuman can achieve. It just comes down to the bottom line that 90% of people don't focus, don't know what they want, and don't systematically, continuously work at something, even through the dark spots.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you said, focus and perseverance, it'll get you to wherever you want to be.
Like when I opened the show with this story of Wilma Rudolph. I mean, this girl is born prematurely, gets polio, gets her legs deformed from the virus, can't walk without being in braces to the age of 9. I think at the age of 12, she gets polio again. People are like, you know, she'll never walk properly, let alone play sports. By the age of 15, she's on the high school track team because she just never gave up on her dream when everyone else did. Next thing you know, she goes to the Olympics and becomes the fastest woman in the world. And from your MMA days, since you're a fan, we had G Money on, who is an MMA fighter with Down syndrome, and he has to get his knee drained every week from his training because it swells up from his rheumatoid arthritis. This is determination at work. But Saeed, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us on Eye on Careers.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Shane.
And we wish you great luck with the Shaxi Group. I look forward to hearing about your acquisitions. You may have a few investment bankers chasing you out of the studio this evening.
Well, I hope so.
Thank you. That was Saeed Al-Shaxi, the Chief Executive Officer of the Shaxi Group. He is following his dream of being an entrepreneur and has survived a near bankruptcy. You can catch it on our website, dubaii138.com/eyeoncareers. That's it for this episode. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, hoping the rest of your life is the best of your life.